And another team that we know will be in the NCAA tournament, not an automatic bid, but they're going to have a ticket to the dance on the women's side of the NCAA tournament, the Kansas State women's basketball team, as they 22-10 overall, 11-7 in the Big 12, and they just now, it's a matter of finding out where they're seated, where they go, who they play in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Here to talk about that and his professional experience is Chris Carr, Director of Student Athlete Development and member of the K-State Women's Coaching Staff. Coach Carr, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Not bad. I appreciate the time. Let's just start with chronological order a little bit here. Give a little background on yourself, where you went to college, and how you got to K-State.
Well, I went to college at Southern Illinois University a long, long time ago. Not that long, actually, but long enough. Left after my junior year, got drafted into the NBA, played 7 years in the NBA, 2 years in Europe. When I completed playing in Europe, I started a basketball training facility called 43 Hoops Basketball Academy in Hopkins, Minnesota, and worked with kids, ran camps, clinics, did personal training from kindergartners to NBA guys, and also was a high school coach in Minnesota for 5 years, had two state tournament appearances, and that catapulted me to getting an interview here with Coach Mitty and this past summer, and now I've been here since August.
When you were growing up, did you play a lot of basketball as a kid, out on the playground, wherever the case may be, and dream about being an NBA player? And did you think that was a realistic expectation, or did it not occur to you until you were in college after you were the Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year in 1995 that, hey, I can play in the league?
You know, as a kid, you always dream about wanting to be something. And where I came from a town of 722 people. Not many people went to college and things of that nature. So I was just hoping to get to college. I wanted to go to college to actually be a lawyer. And whenever I walked out the door going to college, I told my mom, I said, when I come back in 3.5 years, I'm going to have my political science degree, and I'm going to be starting my first year of law school in the second semester of my senior year. And then I got to college and started playing. We go to the NCAA tournament my freshman year. We played Duke, have a double-double against the two-time defending national champions, and they had a plethora of NBA guys on that roster, Grant Hill and Bobby Hurley, Cherokee Parks, Thomas Hill, and played really well. And I was like, you know, I think I could be pretty good at this. And then it kind of just hit me. I said, you know, I should work as hard as I can to be the best I can be. And if I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough. But I'll never have to look at my kids watching a game whenever I'm older. And I tell them, oh, I could have made it to the NBA if I'd have worked harder, you know.
Yeah.
Because then that's setting them up to say, oh, I can just be so-so or average and not work as hard as I can or whatever, and it'll be okay. So that was kind of how I kind of platformed myself to become a pro, and, you know, God blessed me with some talents and some abilities to do some things, and I just tried to make the most of it.
Second round pick by the Phoenix Suns in the 1995 NBA draft, and had a six-year NBA career, and you played for the Suns, you played for the Timberwolves, the Nets, the Bulls, the Celtics, and the Cavaliers, and that's a lot of interesting organizations because there were some really, really good players with those teams. As you know, Charles Barkley, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, LeBron James starting his career in 2003 with the Cavaliers. What are a few of the highlights of your NBA career that you had over those 6 years?
I had a bunch, and I was blessed to be able to play with some great guys. Got an opportunity to start off my career playing with Charles Barkley, who's an all-time great, and Kevin Garnett and I came into the NBA at the same time. I got to spend 3 years with him, and he was just such a different type of being that I'd never seen anything like it. 7'1", could dribble, could jump, could shoot, could pass, and was very fundamentally sound and just had a desire to win it. It didn't matter if he was throwing a cup in a trash can. He is, you know, he might cuss you out to win, but, you know, he would definitely had that type of mental makeup to where he wanted to always be the best at whatever he was doing, and that showed through his whole career. when I went to Chicago, got to play with Elton Brand and Ron Artest. And Ron Artest had some of the same makeup, borderline crazy,
mm-hmm.
in terms of driven to want to win and be the best and compete every day. And, yeah, it was great. Played with Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce in Boston, and got a chance to see a young Paul Pierce, you know, literally grow up right in front of my eyes. And then starting off my last year, I played in the NBA with Cleveland, and seeing a 18-year-old freak of nature and LeBron James, who I didn't think that there would ever be another Michael Jordan or anybody even close. And you got this 18-year-old kid that can put his eyeballs over the rim and jump from the free throw line and just bound with muscle. And I was like, man, I don't know if this guy will be able to play that long. He's so big, his body will break down. And he's on pace to shatter all the records for most games played in the NBA. So, yeah, it's been a great experience, and loved every minute of it, and just took it all in as much as I could, and learned a lot from it.
We're talking to Chris Carr. He is the Director of Student Athlete Development there at Kansas State, member of Coach Mitty's staff there for the K-State women's basketball team, played in the NBA for 6 years. And I got to ask you about this, because I was reading this in your bio, and I think this would have been one of your highlights of your career, too. It would have been pretty interesting, and that is you were a part of All-Star Saturday Night back in 1997, which was in Cleveland at the time, and you competed in the slam dunk contest, and if it wasn't for Kobe Bryant, you might be the slam dunk champion. I mean, come on, man. That is a story you could tell for years, and a lot of people are going to know who Kobe Bryant is for a while, I would imagine, that, hey, man, the only person that could out-dunk me in 1997, or you could embellish the story, Chris, and you could say the only guy that ever out-dunked me in my career was Kobe Bryant. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, the best part was, it wasn't so much two parts. The dunk contest was great. I mean, you're out on that court, there's 20-plus thousand people, and at the time it was Gund Arena, it wasn't Quicken Loans Arena. And all eyes are on you for those six dunks that you get the opportunity to do. It's like nothing else is going on. There are millions of people watching all over the world, and it's like there are people watching me do this. And that's kind of a surreal feeling. It was fun because Michael Finley and I got drafted into Phoenix together. And we used to have dunk contests after practice all the time. We would be in there, and we'd have the veterans would be judging us, and you can't do this, and you can't do this. And before long, you're another hour and a half after practice, you're out on the court still dunking and, you know, dead tired. But so it was fun to get opportunity to actually beat him, you know, as I did several times whenever we were in practice, although he'd probably remember it differently.
Sure.
But if you go back and watch it, I wouldn't necessarily say that Kobe beat me more so than the judges voted in the way that they wanted to. And I'm just going to leave that question mark on the end of that, so anybody that's listening, they can go back and watch it themselves, and then they can be the judge of it. So anytime they have stuff on Twitter or whatnot, I'll always, you know, give Kobe a little shot, and I'll be like, did you really win? And a couple of times he's went back and he's like, Carr, you know I won. You know, and so it was fun. But probably the best part of that whole weekend was the fact that was the weekend that they celebrated the NBA's 50 greatest.
Oh, that's right.
And I got the opportunity to meet the pioneers that had laid the way for me to be able to play. And guys that I grew up watching and emulating and idolizing from a basketball perspective. I got to meet Dr. J, got to meet Elgin Baylor, got to meet Elvin Hayes, got to meet Wilt Chamberlain, got to meet Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I played against Magic my rookie year. I got to meet Larry whenever we had went to Indiana because he was in the front office with the Pacers at the time. But I got an opportunity to be around those guys, meet Isaiah Thomas, meet Joe Dumars. And it was just a real treat for me. I was like a kid in a candy store. I'm running around like, hey, could you sign this? And they're looking at me like, dude, you're in the NBA too. Why are you asking us to sign stuff? You play in the same league we played in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the name recognition is just a tad bit different. So that was the biggest highlight for me for that whole weekend, is getting an opportunity to experience that with one of my best friends and my mother and my some of my family members. That was the best part about it.
You were in the league for 6 years, and you mentioned Larry Bird. You met him, and of course, with Indiana at the time, but he played for the Boston Celtics. And I've read many things about how Larry Bird was the biggest trash talker in the National Basketball Association when he played. Who was the biggest trash talker or a guy that got under your skin when you played?
See, I never had really anybody that could get under my skin because I was a trash talker myself.
Yeah.
So anything that was going to come at me was probably well-deserved.
Uh-huh.
Unless it was one of the big-name guys. And then I knew Let a Sleeping Dog Lie. Michael Jordan was probably the worst. Just because at the time when I first came in the league, that was when the Bulls were 72-10, and they were like the Beatles. I mean, every place they went, there were thousands of people just to get a glimpse of them. But the thing that was most interesting about those guys was they would never talk directly to you. Scottie Pippen, Ron Harper, and Dennis Rodman would talk about you with you standing right there. And they would just rip you a new one. I can't believe this guy even got a uniform off. We should make him take his jersey off and play naked in front of all these people. You know, they'd just say stuff just to, you'd be like, I'm standing right here. And they'd just keep going. So, but Michael Jordan was one of the more ruthless trash talkers. Reggie Miller was, he would come up with stuff out of nowhere. Like, you'd miss the first couple shots, and he would just pop up, and you'd be guarding him. You'd be standing next to him, and he'd be like, yeah, you're starting off this game like you did in the NCAA tournament your sophomore year, and you missed your first 7 shots. You might have had a good game, but you still sucked in the first half. And then there he goes. He's off the screen, and he's gone, and he's shooting the ball. And you're like, where did that come from? He does that, you know. And so that, you know, but Reggie was a great guy, and he was a very good mentor to me. I'll tell you another one. Glenn Rice was also a big trash talker.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy that kind of took me under his wing my rookie year and really helped me hone in on who I became as a player. And he was like, the preparation that goes into being a shooter slash scorer in the NBA is you don't have the luxury of having a night off. You got to always be ready when called upon, no matter what the situation, and you got to be prepared. And that was great for me as a young player to be able to went down to Miami, Florida, and worked out with them for a couple weeks, you know, after my rookie year, and got an opportunity to see what a real guy that works on his game does. And I was like, wow, now I know why he doesn't miss when he's open, you know. And so that really fueled me to say, you know, you need to work at this even more than what you already do, and work a little bit differently to get the most out of what your abilities will provide for you.
What was the biggest issue for you when you're NBA in regards to difficulty? And it could be, I know the travel can be tough at times, a lot of back-to-backs. What was the biggest thing you had to deal with or adjust to in the NBA, whether it had been on or off the court?
You know, the probably the biggest thing that was a huge adjustment for me was the fact that you were never advantaged whenever you were on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not a drinker. I've never touched drugs or alcohol in my life. And I was marveled at guys that could go out and then come out the next night and score 25 points. I was like, this guy is amazing. Mm-hmm. But I was never advantaged, or I never felt like I was advantaged ever at any night. I mean, think about the shooting guards. So you got, we're in Phoenix, so we go to Chicago, Michael Jordan. We go to Indiana, Reggie Miller. We go to New York, Allen Houston. Go to Orlando, Penny Hardaway and Nick Anderson. And then, oh, yeah, okay, so we come back home, and we have Seattle. Well, your night off is Hersey Hawkins. And then you go to Utah the next night. Well, your next night off is Jeff Hornacek.
Yeah.
And it's like, what in the world? It's like there was never a time where you could ever just sit back and say, oh, yeah, I can kind of coast tonight and I'll still do my thing. It was never like that for me. And so really being able to adjust to an understanding you need to get rest every opportunity that you get and take care of your body because the next game is coming no matter whether you're ready or not.
When you were in the league for 6 years, did you, and we're talking Chris Carr, he is in his first season at K-State as the Wildcats Director of Student Athlete Development and non-coach committee's staff there at Kansas State women's basketball team. Did you ever have a situation when you were playing where it wasn't fun? I mean, did you, because a lot of people say, hey, you're playing a game and you're playing a young man's game or young woman's game and it's a game and it should be fun. We've talked to former NFL players. I talked to, I think it was Nick Leckie, and he said, man, it was rough. I mean, it wasn't really, it was a job. It really wasn't necessarily fun. But what about you during your six-year career? Were there times where you just said, this is a lot of work and this isn't fun anymore? Or did you truly, thoroughly enjoy the game of basketball throughout your NBA career?
I love basketball, and I still love basketball today, which is why I feel it's a sheer blessing. Every day I get to come to work and be here in this beautiful facility and work for a great boss and be at a place like K-State. It's truly a blessing because it's really just about basketball. Now, the other side of that is the business of basketball is not fun, and that's taxing and that's draining and that's tiring and it's stressful and it's frustrating because you just feel like if I go to work every day and do my job, I should get to the reap the benefits or the rewards of getting paid for doing it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because of the business aspect and the win now mentality, that's not always the case. And so that's the part of it that makes sports, it takes the love and the fervor out of it for a lot of athletes. It's not necessarily the grind. I mean, you always love going on the road. You love the plane rides because you get to play cards. You get to sit, laugh, and joke, and cut up. You get to go out and eat nice meals whenever you get into town. You get to just hang and just be cool. That's the part of it that is the most probably in the locker room. Those are the areas that are the most missed by any athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And the preparation for games, you know, that's taxing on your body, but you get in a rhythm and a routine and you just understand how your body works, and so it's not bad. But the business aspect of it is what takes all of that. It's like, well, why am I doing this? Well, why am I going to job to work today? Because it doesn't matter. I'm going to get cut at the end of the season anyway. That's the part of it that kind of wears on you and takes away your love for and passion for what you're doing.
Yeah, you could be traded any point in time or cut from the team, as you mentioned. Now, you played overseas, and you were telling me a story when we were there at the Virgin Islands when the K-State women were there earlier this season, and you were telling me a story overseas, because when you play overseas, it's a whole different ball game. Of course, the culture is different, and sometimes you were in some unsafe areas. Can you share with people a little bit of your experience overseas?
Oh, yeah. Well, I played in Athens, Greece, and that was beautiful, great, and getting to see the Greek islands and being able to do that stuff, that was just a piece of life that I'll always cherish. Then I played in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, which was still war-riddled and poverty-stricken and just a different city and just how things are ran so different, you know. Those two parts of my career at the end of my career were great life experiences for me. At that point, it wasn't so much about the basketball. It was more about experiencing life and getting to see it through a different set of eyes other than just, I show up, I dribble a ball, I shoot it, and everybody likes me. It's like, no, half these people don't have any idea who you are. Mm-hmm. You're just this tall guy walking around for no reason, and why are you here? And you don't speak the same language and can't communicate. They can't communicate with you, and you got to figure it out, because if you don't, you're going to have a miserable time while you're there. And so those were the things that I took most from that. And it being in Yugoslavia, it was a little bit different because you got to see the other side of like things like the Bosnian War, Kosovo, and all of the stuff that you read about or see read about in USA Today or see on CNN News. I got to see the other side of it from the perspective of the people that live there and how it impacted their country, their government, you know, corruption and assassinations and all of that stuff. And so it was really very interesting for me to be able to get that perspective on just life as a whole.
You're in your first season with the Kansas State women's basketball program, and of course you're having a great year, 22-10. We mentioned 11-7 in the Big 12, and the NCAA tournament selection will come out here pretty soon. You guys know that you're going to be in the NCAA tournament. Certainly last year the team made it to the second round of the tournament but had to face a number one seed in the second round. I'm sure you guys are feeling feel pretty good to avoid an 8-9 seed. What are you hearing from people as to what your seed might be, where you might go, and how good do you guys feel going into the NCAA tournament?
Well, you know, the I would say that we're in a good position from a standpoint of the motto whenever I got here was leave no doubt. And we use that as a catchphrase every day from a preparation perspective, from a player's perspective, and from a coaching perspective, that we didn't want to walk into the room on a selection show and wonder if. And we wanted to say it's not if, but it's just where and when. And that was kind of how we approached every day this year. And, you know, going 11-7 in our conferences is a real treat. And, you know, I feel that we had a chance to even be even better. We needed a few more bounces to go our way, but that's just the way that the game goes for us. So now we're sitting here. We had a good showing. We finished up the season strong by beating Oklahoma at home. Went into the tournament, beat Iowa State. And so coming out of our conference, which is the most competitive conference in America, you know, we've seen as high as 5, we've seen as low as 7, and we'll probably be somewhere in that range. Who knows? We could get lucky and get a 5 seed, and that would be a real treat. We could be as low as 7. That's okay, because guess what? We still got to go play whoever it is and however we get seeded, but the best part is we get an opportunity to play on the big stage when the highest stakes are on the line, and we have a chance to be in control of what we do, which is continue to prepare every day and continue to work to be the best we can be.
You have a very talented family. I know, of course, I believe one of your daughters is going to go to Kansas State and play basketball. I believe it was your son I saw at a basketball tournament in Clay Center earlier this year. He had the name Carr on the back of his jersey, and he looked pretty athletic. He looked like he could have been your son.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that was him. He was a sixth grade player, right?
Yep, that was him.
Oh, my goodness, man. I just want to tell you something. I thought about going down and getting an autograph from him just in case he makes it as big as you or even bigger, because the kid was so smooth. He could have taken the ball and been a ball hog. He could have scored every time down, but he was very unselfish. He made things look easy. He didn't force things. He was a good passer, a good shooter. He can jump out of the gym. And I just want to say, I haven't seen all your kids play ball, but that young man has got a pretty good future if he wants to keep going in the craft.
Yeah, you know, the funniest part about Cameron, he has grown up in my era of coaching. So he has spent a lot of time scouting games with me. He spent a lot of time sitting and watching film. And so he has grown up being a junkie of the game of basketball, so to speak. And he's a real student of it. And the part that's probably best about him is the fact that if he sees it, he thinks he can do it. And so we can sit and watch a game, and he'll see a guy make a move. Well, he'll jump up and grab his basketball, and I'm going to make that move in the game this weekend, Dad. I'm like, well, son, what if that situation doesn't come up? He's like, no, I'll make it come up just so I can do that move. And so it's funny just to see his creative mind around the game, mm-hmm. of how he thinks about the stuff that he does and the creativity that he brings inside of the work that he has put in to be very fundamentally sound. You know, it's just great to see, and I'm proud of him. It's, you know, he's got a chance to be all right. I just want him to just keep loving what he does and keep working at it to be the best he can be. And it'll work out the way it's supposed to. Just as long as he doesn't go to Kansas will be okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, he certainly plays good enough to play at K-State at KU if he keeps going on the trajectory he has. I was really impressed by him, and I tried to tell my son he could learn from him as well, because, like I told him, I said, you know, he wasn't selfish. He included people, got his teammates involved, and to me that makes for a really good player and a guy that's going to be liked by his teammates, keeping people involved, even though he has just tremendous athleticism, and you should be a proud father of him and all of your kids, no question about it. Before I let you go, Chris, I'm going to give you our off-the-wall question, something just completely off the wall, and you can answer it, okay? And that is, I remember you talking a little bit about this there at the Virgin Islands, but what's the oddest meal that you've ever been served or you've eaten? And I would guess it might have been something when you were overseas, because I know you were telling me at one time you're trying to figure out how to order things when you don't speak the language.
Yeah. Let's see here. I have eaten some rather unique things whenever I played overseas. I've eaten alligator.
Uh-huh.
I've eaten rattlesnake. I've eaten goose. I've eaten duck, which I don't know if that's necessarily odd. I think people would eat that here.
Uh-huh.
I can say I've eaten a lot of unique things. You know, the beauty of any type of meat that you eat, if it's well done and has barbecue sauce on it, it all tastes about the same as a steak anyway.
You're good with it, huh?
Yeah, and that's why I say I could always be on the show Survivor. Because if I can kill it and you can burn it, I can eat it. And so that's okay.
Were you ever served something where you just were like shook your head and said, I have no idea what this is, should I even try it or not?
Yes, in Yugoslavia they had a meal and it was named after a famous general. It was called Kai Georgie. And I was like, what is this? And all my teammates like, come on man, it's meat. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. I'm sitting there trying to figure out, I don't know what this is. And so here I am. I traveled with a bottle of barbecue sauce every place I went when we went on the road, because I was like, I don't have any idea what it is. And it was kind of like a breaded meat. And I was like, well, what is the meat? And they're like, man, it's good. It's good. Just eat. And so I pour barbecue sauce all over it and get my knife out and I cut it and I'm eating it. And I'm like, it doesn't taste bad.
Yeah.
You know, and they're kind of like just chuckling. They're all eating the same thing. And I'm like, well, what is this? And they're like, and they say it's snake shank. And I'm like, what is snake shank? And I can't go into detail about why the Kai Georgie resembled a snake shank. All I can say is that I guess Georgie the general, in his last dying efforts, was dismembered in a way that animals, particularly horses, are dismembered from time to time. And so the rumor was that it resembled a snake shank. And so that was the running joke behind the meal. It was supposed to be a delicacy, and I didn't quite understand the joke until I'd eaten, and we had got back on the bus, and we were about 3 hours home, and I was like, snake shank? Why would snake shank? And then I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking... And then they're all sitting there looking at me like, how dumb can you be? So, yeah, so that was my most unique thing that I've ever had, and I have never had Kai Georgie again.
I don't blame you. It sounds like something I'm not going to try either. I'll stick with what you told me about it. How's that?
Yeah, that's good.
Hey, Chris, appreciate the time here today. It was a treat to get to meet you there during the trip of the Virgin Islands, and continued success for you and your family. Best of luck in the NCAA tournament, and we appreciate the time here today on the Sports Ticket.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, and thank you. We appreciate it. Go Cats.
That's Chris Carr, his first season at K-State, Wildcats Director of Student Athlete Development here on the Sports Ticket.